Now, today marks the official anniversary of the start of World War I 100 years ago. Nearly 10 million men died in the four-year conflict, including 50,000 Irish servicemen. Well, I'm joined in studio now by Miles Dungan, presenter of RTE's The History Show and author of Irish Voices from the Great War. And Miles, you're here to talk about Ireland's role in the war. And at that stage in 1914, was this country heading for a civil war?
Very much so. And it was a source of considerable relief to people like Asquith, for example, the British Prime Minister, that war in Europe was about to begin because it had prevented civil war in Ireland. And I'm not being completely facile. He does actually record a sentence in one of his letters to that effect. Undoubtedly, there would have been. We were on the verge of a civil war in Ireland, a straightforward unionist nationalist civil war, unlike the civil war we did have, which was a nationalist nationalist civil war. So the onset of war in Europe essentially, to some extent, brought the country together. You had the politicians on either side, Carson and Redmond, both threw their support behind the British government and its decision to become involved in the European war.
And did the public in general as well?
By and large it did, and recruitment started very quickly, and there was a fairly high level of enthusiasm for recruitment.
There was no conscription, was there?
No, conscription was never introduced in Ireland. Conscription, Ireland and Australia are unique in that respect, and they're the only countries who were involved in any major way in the war where conscription was not introduced. There were two referenda in Australia. There were no referenda here. There was an attempt made to introduce conscription in 1918 by the British government, which was resisted by Sinn Féin, the Irish Parliamentary Party, the Labour Party, the Roman Catholic Church, and the British government decided it wasn't worth the game, wasn't worth the candle. It would probably take more soldiers to enforce conscription than would actually be gained by conscription.
So how many people signed up?
Altogether, if you include those who were already involved as members of the regular forces, the British Army, who were reservists and who enlisted in Ireland, the total comes to somewhere between 200 and 210,000. A lot figures in World War One are not an exact science. Mm. They're always approximations, although you will see exact figures down to the last body, but they're still approximations. Record keeping was not as good as it is now.
And what did they do? What was their experience? Were they on the front line?
Most of them would have been on the front line. Most of them were involved in infantry battalions. There were 9 infantry battalions who went from this country to the First World War, and the infantry were at the sharp end of proceedings. There were some cavalry regiments who would have been very much in action and very much involved in the first months of the war and in the last months of the war as cavalrymen. But by and large, the experience of the Irish after the first 3 or 4 months, which was open warfare, there was lots of movement. There was the retreat of the British Expeditionary Force from Mons to an area north of Paris, and then there was the return, if you like, there was the retreat of the Germans in the opposite direction a few months later. But once by the end of 1914, you had settled down into essentially in 1915, 16, 17, and most of 1918, or a lot of 1918, trench warfare. And that would have been the experience of the Irish soldier in World War One. Would have been the experience of the trenches.
A lot of casualties?
In Irish terms, yes. The figure of 50,000, which is thrown around, is an inaccurate figure. It's based on the Irish National War Memorial records. There are 49,647 names. This is what I mean by exactitude in those records. But 11,000 of those are names of mainly British soldiers who found themselves, particularly from 1916, 17, 18 onwards, who found themselves in Irish regiments. So only about 31,000 of those names we can verify as being Irish. There's a mysterious 7,500 names. We don't know where they came from. I think myself that probably about 2/3, 3/4 of those were actually Irish. Then you have the Irish who joined up in Australia, in America, in Canada. There were lots of those. There were 6,000, for example, Irish born who joined up in Australia, 900 of whom died. And so if you add those in, you probably get a figure of, I'd say, just under 40,000 altogether.
And in terms of the people left behind, the women and the men who didn't join up, what was their experience like?
It varied. It depended on whether you were genuinely left behind in the sense that you were the wife of or a family member of somebody who was serving with the armed forces, or whether the man of the house was not serving in the armed forces. If you were, say, the wife of somebody serving in the armed forces, you got a separation allowance. And in the case of inner city Dublin, for example, this would have meant that there were women who had never had access to money, to cash,
their own money
in their lives before, now had their own money. And you had stories of, tenement apartments being furnished, for example. Now, they didn't go out and buy the furniture, but they had the ability to pay, to make the payments on the furniture. So in some cases, you would have had tensions, you would have had jealousies between the families of those who were at the front and were in receipt of separation allowances and those who weren't. Farmers did particularly well because there was an increase in prices. There were attempts by the government to put a lid on that through the under terms of various enactments and regulations of the Defence of the Realm Act and so on and so forth. You would have, and also trade unionists, because there was an onus on the part of the government to ensure continuity, that there was no disruption of the supply of munitions, of that there was no disruption to industry. So they tended to do deals with trade unions. Trade union membership, for example, hugely increased during the First World War. So a lot of people who didn't go to war did quite well out of it. However, on the other hand, you had prices increased. Mm. So you had people who did not benefit, who were not in industries, who were not in businesses that were had any link to the war, and they would not have had good negotiating positions. They would have suffered very badly. So it varied. There were also food shortages in Ireland towards the end of the war, in particular, in a country which had gone from 9% under tillage to 39% under tillage. There were still food shortages.
Is it true that some of the women were devastated when their husbands came home alive from the war because the money stopped?
Yes. Anecdotally, that is the case. You would have had husbands who would have had, might not have been necessarily welcome in their own houses because of the way they treated their wives and the way they treated their children, who would have gone to war. And anecdotally, you would have had women who would have talked about, 4 years of freedom, and they would have had a good life, a decent life. And then the husband comes back home. Now you've got a husband coming back home who is quite possibly also traumatized by war. So in addition to what he might have been getting up to before the war, he now has, you could now add a layer of PTSD on top of that.
Well, exactly. And presumably at that time, there was no follow-up services or anything like that for the soldiers coming back.
Very, very few. In the final programme of the series that we're doing, which starts on Monday with a 90-minute special, an overview of the war, the final programme, we're looking at the aftermath of the war. And Dr. Brendan Kelly, who's a psychiatrist and also an historian, who talks about a relatively small number of men who were treated for shell shock, who had counselling, who would have had the talking cure, the Craig Lockhart treatment, if you like. Craig Lockhart being the sanatorium outside of Edinburgh, which features in the Pat Barker Regeneration novel, where W.H. Rivers was the chief psychiatrist. So there was an element of that, but very, very little of it.
Okay, we're going to leave it there, Miles, but there's lots and lots of coverage on the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I across RTE today. But as you say, you can hear more about the role of Irish people in the First World War on RTE Radio 1 this Bank Holiday Monday at 1:30.
And then four programmes, the four following Sundays from 10 to 11 after that.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming in, Miles Dungan there.